Okay, so today I'm going to address two questions: how much water is in the upper mantle, and then following that, how much are mantle plumes wet? And to answer this question, I'm going to first go through how we derive the composition of the upper mantle, and then I'm going to compare estimated water content we get out of that scheme to what we can estimate from mantle plumes, and more specifically in Samoa. Okay, abyssal prototypes were introduced by Jessica, and she was talking about the trace element composition of some abyssal prototypes. And what this shows are elements that we have information for abyssal prototypes. And then this is the concentration pattern for those elements. So the first thing we're going to do in determining upper mantle composition is start with this information. And what you see if you plot log one element versus log of another element, that you get these linear arrays. And that's because they follow a fractional melting trend. And equating melt fractions, you can get this equation. And what this says is that the slope is a function of the relative partitioning of two elements into the melt. Okay, so we have this array. Here's the primitive mantle, or bulk silicate earth. And then here are all the prototypes that have had melt extracted from them. So the question is, where on this line is the upper mantle? So to answer that, we use observations of isotope compositions of MORBs. And that helps us because we can infer from the isotope evolution what today's parent-daughter ratio is. Okay, so this is just a continuous depletion model, and we observe this and then calculate this number. So we can go back to this plot. Here's samarium and neodymium, and this is the abyssal prototype array. And now we know samarium and neodymium, so we can intersect that line and then know the samarium and neodymium concentrations. So we take this basis and solve for the composition of all the, or solve for the concentration of all those elements listed there. Okay, so that's one piece of information. There's this other, there's this concept of canonical ratios, and all it means is that there's some trace elements that don't fractionate from each other when they get melted, or when a source gets melted. And what you can see here is niobium and tantalum, and all along this concentration, over a big range in concentration, the niobium-tantalum ratio is the same. Okay, so we take this to mean that it's also the same in the source. Okay, so just to construct the trace element pattern, here's the information that we get from abyssal prototypes, and then adding other isotope systems, we can add other points on this diagram. And then the canonical ratios, and that completes the whole trace element pattern for DMM. So we can get estimates for all these elements. And again, these are listed in order of compatibility. So what this says is that the most incompatible elements, rubidium, barium, thorium, uranium, are the most depleted. And that makes sense. So this is a pretty internally consistent model. When we do the inversion, we get errors that are on the order of 1 to 5%, which I think is pretty good. But we're not totally sure that it's accurate. So to test that, I want to see if I can take the trace element pattern that we derive for the upper mantle and generate an average MORB composition. And it turns out that with a really simple melting model, we can almost identically match the MORB composition. So that's good. That's encouraging. Okay, so the properties of this stuff. The trace element composition derived represents about 2 to 3% melt depletion from primitive mantle. Average oceanic crust is generated at mid-ocean ridges by 6% aggregated fractional melting. And I'm going to show you in a minute that you have to have about 30% of the mantle composed of this material. And the radiogenic heat production in this upper mantle is 15% that the bulk with. So that we did some major damage to the heat-producing elements in just 2 to 3% melt removal. Okay, this is a crust mantle mass balance, and what it shows is that to take, so we know we have a huge budget of trace elements in the continental crust. And the question is, how much mantle do you have to have be this depleted composition to make up for those elements? And it turns out that you have to have about 30% of the mantle depleted. That's not a new number. People have been suggesting that number for probably 30 years. But what we've done here is agrees with all that. So that takes this composition down to about the transition zone, roughly. And that's a minimum. Because if you want to talk about having other enriched reservoirs in the mantle, like if there's an eclogite component, then you have to have even more of the mantle be depleted to compensate for that a trace element enriched reservoir. Okay, so now I can try to answer this question, how much water is there? Turns out that water cerium is a semi-canonical ratio. There's a lot of scatter in it, but the water cerium ratio in morbs hovers about 200. And so if you take our estimated cerium concentration in DMM, you get a water concentration of about 110 ppm. And that has bounds of about 70 to 160 ppm. Okay, so remember a value of about 100, and then we're going to go to Samoa and see what Samoan lavas tell us about how wet or dry or anything that an ocean line basalt source has. Okay, so what you can see here is these are data for, these are all lavas, and there's water content and CO2 content. But I just want you to focus on the water axis. You can see that the morbs are fairly low water concentration, and that the Samoan lavas in the black dots are relatively high in water concentration. It's a little misleading to compare it just this way because these lavas in Samoa represent a much smaller degree of melting. So everything's going to be enriched. Okay. So to put it in a little bit more perspective, here's water lanthanum. Lanthanum is, the concept is very similar for lanthanum as it was for the water cerium. So what you see is that as you go to those to more and more radiogenic materials, that you have lower and lower enrichment of water. This is the morb sort or morb mantle here. These are some samples from Lauihi, and as you get more and more EM2 enriched, you have relative dehydration. So it's kind of counterintuitive in some ways. So we have a model for this that says, okay, we know water diffuses really fast in the upper mantle. So if you start with something that has high water and you let it age in the mantle, you can pretty effectively dehydrate it just by diffusion. And so this is something that's about 6 kilometers just for this calculation. And at a fairly high temperature, so these are mid-mantle temperatures, and then sit around in a depleted mantle that has about 100 ppm water. And just to quickly show you how fast this diffusion happens, this is the 6 kilometers. This is where the wet stuff started, and this is where the dry ambient mantle is. 1 million years, you've already affected, you know, a kilometer of material. And this is just by volume diffusion. This isn't even including grain boundary diffusion. So this is fast. But I admit that that was a really high temperature. No. So, advection? No. Okay, so in 20 million years, you like basically halved the water concentration. 100 million years, which it seems to be roughly recycling time, but I wouldn't defend that because I don't know. And in a 500 million years, you've lost 75% of the initial water and have nearly equilibrated with the ambient mantle. So these are... And this is just a schematic to show you a little bit better or worse how this works. So if DMM is here, you have an initial water concentration of about 100, and this is the lanthanum concentration. If you say that water and lanthanum or water and cerium weren't strongly fractionated from each other during the creation of this reservoir, the EM2 enriched mantle reservoir, then you would be somewhere up here. So you have high water and high lanthanum to start with. But over time, you slowly just lose the water to the ambient mantle and it can approach the observed water land sediment ratio. So, thank you. A 1,000 ppm is 0.1 weight percent, right? 0.01 weight percent. Yeah. 1,000 ppm equals 0.1 weight percent. Yeah.
Mass balance
between the points. So, what was that? Say that again, the question? I'm sorry.
That has an anomaly there.
Oh, in the MORB source?
Yeah. So
yeah.
You have a mass balance there, and it's just
because
curious about the whole well that.
Because there's so much lead in the crust.
When do the results change if the bulk is not?
It'll change a little bit. Yeah, and. It'll change when I tell you that I think it's 2 to 3% melt depleted. That value would change probably the most. But the that point is defined by the abyssal prototypes, which we observe. That's a real. We know that's true, and those are the Earth. So if you moved around Volkswilke Earth by a little bit, yeah, you would change it by a very small amount, but not much.
I was looking that this loop is not the doesn't feed the data, but it's going to
pass. Yep. So yep, it's hinged on box locator.
If you see this loop, it's a little bit different.
If current Carson model, another option for Carson model would be the Earth is not integrated. Based on their epsilon.
You wouldn't be able to see how much it would move on the spot. It would be within the outside line of the symbol. Volatile data, but they're not on samples that have isotopes, I don't think. I should look again, but I think they're on glasses that don't have isotopes.
And on the previous slide? I'm curious, why is probably resulting in a larger degree of melt?
A higher
still has high water concentrations. So, is it just
completely? So, the north arch?
The north arch?
The north arch is really alkalic stuff. Okay, if it's 1200, then you have to add a zero to all these. So if it's 1200, then you add two, it'll be 200 million years.
You get the value of water content that is similar to the saturation limit of the upper mantle phase.
No, it's very, very undersaturated.
0.01% the limit saturation of olivine.
Yeah, and then if about 60% of the mode is olivine, and the saturation at a couple GPA is maybe, let's say, 1,000 ppm, and then it's 10 times higher concentration for the pyroxene. So you have 40% of the MOs times 10,000 ppm plus 60% at 1,000. So it's...
Okay.
Thank you.